Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, November the 11th. Happy Veterans Day to everybody, whether you're listening here or up in Canada, where they also remember the day, and of course in England as well. I mean, it actually all comes from World War One, as you may remember from your history. On November 11th, at 11 hours, the war ended. So it became, at first it was known as Remembrance Day, and then it became Veterans Day in the United States. And that's what we celebrate today, Veterans Day. One of the truly great days of the year when you can put politics aside and just simply say thank you to all of the people who have served in the armed forces from the Revolutionary War to the more recent struggles against terrorism. So thank you very much for your service. If you see a veteran today, and many wear the uniform today, I find that fascinating. Many wear the uniform today, and if they do, well, say thank you to them. I think they deserve it. They were the ones who were willing to risk their lives so that you and I can live in a free country. So just say thank you to them. If you see a veteran today, whether he's wearing the uniform or if you find out that somebody's a veteran, say thank you on a day like Veterans Day 2019. Well, today we're going to talk about three things happening in Latin America, in Bolivia, in Brazil, and in Mexico. It's been an interesting 72 hours here for those three countries. A lot of stuff going on, and stuff that could have consequences. And at least in two of those countries, I think things are very unsettled at the moment. And I'll tell you what I mean about that in a second. I just want to tell you that I just saw an article in today's Dallas Morning News today about Julian Castro, and how Julian Castro, this is the gentleman from San Antonio who's running for president on the Democrat side, how he's having a lot of trouble getting Hispanic support. Doesn't seem to click with Hispanics. A lot of Hispanics just aren't, you know, he's just not going anywhere. He's the only Hispanic running, and yet he's not going anywhere in the Democrat primary. And I think that there may be some good reasons for that. And I have a post about this coming out on Tuesday morning. But one of the reasons is I don't think most people know who he is. I mean, just to be honest about it, Julian Castro is well known if you're from San Antonio, because he was the mayor of that city a while back. But I wouldn't say he's extremely well known. Even in Texas, he's not that well known. So I think that's his first problem. He doesn't have a lot of name recognition. His other problem is that he's got a twin brother who seems to be getting as much publicity, if not more, than him. His twin brother is a congressman, and he just, you know, he's out there putting himself on the front pages all the time. So I think people after a while get confused. You know, sometimes I get confused with Julian and Joaquin Castro, both of these gentlemen. The other reason is, and I think this is what I develop a little bit in my post, that I'm not sure that he is really speaking about issues that matter in the Hispanic community. I mean, he seems to be focusing, he has a very radical viewpoint of the border, of border security. He wants to shut down ICE. He is really way to the left on issues like immigration and the border. And one of the most memorable things, or one of his most memorable lines, came from one of the debates when he basically said that a transgender has a right to have an abortion. I guess I'm assuming if he or she has a sex change. I'm not exactly sure how that would work biologically, but the whole idea that he would even say that, I think, number one, turns off probably a lot of Hispanics who are very conservative about abortion, and probably turns off a lot of serious people who listen to something like that and go, this is not a serious candidate. I mean, a candidate who's talking about abortion for transgenders, that's just not a serious candidate. So I don't expect Julian Castro to go anywhere. Once upon a time, I thought that he would be a VP candidate. For example, if Elizabeth Warren were to win the nomination, she could potentially pick him in Texas as the vice presidential nominee. That could be possible. Or if, let's say, Kamala Harris were to win the nomination, then yes, I could see that, Kamala Harris picking Julian Castro as VP. But other than that, I don't really see much much more ahead for him. I don't see him running for governor of Texas. His brother, I think, wanted to do that. So anyway, Julian Castro not doing a lot to get Hispanic support, and I'm not really that surprised, honestly, by that development. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's happening down in three Latin American countries, and let's start with Bolivia. Well, down in Bolivia, for those of you who follow that country, you know that they've had a president in Bolivia now, Evo Morales, who is very much of a left-winger. He is he's not just a populist. He's a left-winger, complete left-winger. I would argue he's a communist. And anyway, he just recently was involved in a very controversial election. There were massive demonstrations. And Evo Morales decided that, okay, I'll resign. And maybe we can hold elections again. Now, I don't know if this is going to work out. I mean, I honestly don't know how this is going to work out in Bolivia, if he's going to be able to actually, you know, come back and run as a candidate. I don't know what the rules are. All I can tell you is, for the time being, Bolivia is in a bit of a constitutional crisis, to say the least. And who's the next president of Bolivia is anybody's guess. But as someone who has always opposed Evo Morales and what he stands for, I'm pretty happy. I'm very, very happy that he's not going to be president of Bolivia, at least for the time being. He may win the next election, I don't know. But for the time being, he's not going to be the president. And it's good to see that. It's good to see that people stand up and say, we're not going to put up with corruption. We're not going to put up with fraudulent results. And they stand up and they win. I think that's always good to see. Good to see that in Bolivia. The other big story, of course, was Brazil. In Brazil, as you may remember, the fellow they call Lula, he's got a long, long name, but anyway, they call him Lula. He was president of Brazil for a couple of terms, probably a pretty popular president, as I hear. Again, a populist, a leftist populist, but he was president during a time when Brazil was doing well, when the economy was doing well. So he sort of became the darling of the international banks and the international community, and Lula, Lula, Lula was the talk of the town. But of course, what we didn't know was that Lula was a corrupt president. And while he was out there talking about, you know, talking with the people about this and this and that, he was engaging in some pretty rough corruption, particularly with the workers' party and the state monopoly, the oil monopoly. And he got caught and he got sentenced to jail. Well, a judge has decided that he needed to be released. I guess there's some technicality, if you will, in the Brazilian law. I'm not familiar with it, but some technicality that allowed a judge to say that he should be released. And, you know, everybody in Brazil is up in arms about this. Now, I suppose when I say everybody in Brazil is up in arms, I should say the people who don't like him are up in arms, because they feel that, you know, they feel he's gotten away with a lot of corruption, and that this is just a way of vindicating that he can get away with all of that corruption. So I'm not sure this is going to play well, because what exactly is going to be Lula's role? I think if he was smart, what he would do is he'd disappear from public view. He'd simply say, hey, you know, I got out of jail, I'm going to disappear, and I'm not going to be involved in day-to-day politics, because I need to stay away and just get away from this. That's what he should do. But I'm not sure he's going to do that, because there's a lot of pressure on him to stay active. So, of course, on the other hand, you have President Bolsonaro, who is from the exact other opposite of the political extreme. He's also a very strong man. He's also a man who is committed to eradicating a lot of this corruption in Brazil. So what I fear is that there is going to be a confrontation between these two men, political confrontation, that is, between these two men. And it will make, to say the least, Brazilian politics rather interesting here for the next few months. So Brazil and Bolivia, two countries who share a border down in South America. Well, today, those two countries are in the news. I'm not sure if they're in the news for the right reasons, but they're in the news, both Bolivia and Brazil. We're going to keep an eye on this. We're going to keep an eye on this whole situation down there, because I don't think this is going to get better anytime soon, particularly in Bolivia. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos Guedes, quite a local musician here. I want you to hear a little bit from him, and I'll tell you more about him right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Just a musical bit there from our friend Carlos Guedes. We have a link to his website, to his schedule on the show information. If you live in the Dallas area or if you want to check out his website, do so. He's got some great music. He's a very talented gentleman from Venezuela, and we love to have him as a part of our show with the music that he that we feature on our show. Carlos Guedes, a very talented and a very good guy as well. He's a very nice person. When you get to know him, you really realize what a great person he is. Just a quick reminder that this is Veterans Day, and on this day in 1885, I find this fascinating, on this day in 1885, George Patton was born. Now, of course, they didn't call it Veterans Day back then, but I just thought it was kind of interesting that one of the great generals of American history would have a birthday on what we now call Veterans Day. He was born in 1885, and then he died in a car accident, I believe, in 1945. Well, let's talk a little bit about the other country that has been in the news here, and that's Mexico. I have a post over at the American Thinker Monday morning. You can check it out on my Facebook political page, on my blog, or, of course, on American Thinker itself, or on Twitter, where I always put these posts. And my post is about Mexico, and in a sense, I'm kind of looking at the situation in Mexico, and I'm hoping that the Mexican government will take very seriously this violence and this trend of violence that has exploded in Mexico, because a lot of American tourists could stop going to Mexico. I mean, you could have a situation that there could be a backlash against the Mexican government for the way they are fighting this this cartel war. You know, you had recently the incident with this massacre in the north of Mexico where these women and children were just massacred. I mean, there's no other explanation for that. Here recently, you had that confrontation between the army and one of the cartels down in Culiacan where the cartels won. I mean, the cartels won. They forced the Mexican army to surrender one of El Chapo's sons. And then the official explanation coming out of Mexico was, well, you know, we felt that it was better to surrender this man than to have a big bloodbath. Well, I can understand that, but I can also understand people like me who say, you know what, you had a great opportunity to do something there. You had captured one of your biggest criminals, and you had an opportunity to really do some damage to the cartels, but you chose not to. And I think that's a criticism of the López Obrador administration that they have not really dealt with. So I think Mexico is going to have to come to terms with the reality that all this violence could potentially hurt American tourism in Mexico. And, you know, it's not the people who go to Cancun that I'm talking about, because those areas are, frankly, pretty much protected from this kind of violence and these kinds of massacres. It's the millions, perhaps thousands, maybe millions of Americans who drive to Mexico. A lot of people drive to Mexico. Particularly Mexican-Americans who go down to see their families. And they're the ones that I'm talking about. They're the ones who drive for holidays. You know, they drive down there on vacations to see their families. They spend a lot of money, of course, in Mexico when they go. And if these people feel that the roads are not safe, well, they're not going to go. They're not going to go, and they're not going to leave that money in Mexico like they've done before. So the Mexican government better get its act together in this situation down there, because it could be very bad for American tourism, and that, of course, would have negative consequences on the Mexican economy. Thank you for listening. It's chilly here in North Texas. We'll talk to you later.